This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Was it the Labour election manifesto of 1983, the longest suicide note in history? Well, I think we might have some competition now.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle 163, sub-episode Alpha. We're off this week because I'm busy doing Edinburgh. And John is probably playing tennis with Shakira or something. What are you up with your latest showbiz adventure?
Playing table tennis with Shakira.
You were nearly there. Oh, sorry, my mistake. I forget she's working her way back from her hamstring.
Yeah. This is just really to keep her eye and her reflexes in. She's small, yeah. Shakira, but her jump is incredible.
Also,
so she's still very dangerous with the smash.
And she really wrong foot you as well. And in doing so, disproves her own theory that hips don't lie. And you think she's going down the line and boom, cross court, got you.
And it's also another way in which she is lucky, as she said, that her breasts are small and humble. Otherwise, you confuse them with mountains. Because that would interfere with her speed around the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's small and humble side of her wappadoodles has made her, I believe, an elite table tennis player.
I remember last time I went skiing, thinking, this is awesome, I'm skiing down Shakira's tits. No, hers are small and humble. Not large and in the north of Italy. But interestingly, covered in snow.
Yes.
You do remember this is an intro for a podcast here.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's try and focus, Andy. So you're in Edinburgh, Hoochmon.
Hooch. Hoochmon eating nothing
but
deep fried bus stops.
And this is some of the stuff that has not been in recent Bugles for reasons that you're about to understand.
Apparently the cost of launching the shuttle is officially $450 million a pop. Some say it's as much as $1.5 billion a pop. And, yeah, I mean, America could invade Mexico once a year for that. So, I mean, you have to ask, have they got more important priorities?
Well, you just have to... It's all about deciding what you want, Andy. America has the money for that. Sometimes you just got to sit down and think, what do I want? Do I want this or a fourth war? And, you know, there's a decision to make at that point. The problem is not so much that the aging shuttle program is being discontinued. It's that there's nothing ready to replace it. The Constellation program has been all but completely disbanded after Obama cut off its funding, which leaves NASA as an organization without a mission. And they're obviously trying to be diplomatic about everything and have been trying to shift the debate to what might come next. A NASA administrator released a statement over the weekend saying, "The future of human spaceflight is bright. You'll hear me say that over and over and over again, so you need to print it." He then stared at his feet and mumbled, "It's definitely bright. Oh, it's so bright. It's so bright. It's why won't anyone believe me about how bright it is? It's bright. It's just so... God, who am I kidding? It's not bright at all. What is wrong with this government? Why won't they let us be amazing?"
But NASA still snouts up 0.5% of the federal budget, I think. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. And no, it's not.
No, isn't it? Well, that's what I read on the internet.
Deputy political editor Jamie Lyons had apparently promised on Twitter that they plan to go out today with a bang. And, you know, basically raised the question, what have they done, Andy? Have they hacked Princess Diana's phone to get her voicemails? How do you top what they've already done? The chief sub-editor, Alan Edwards, said, "It's a paper that's been part of British culture for 168 years, and frankly, I think we've been victims of a witch hunt by some newspapers, and I hope they're happy today as they dance on the grave of a British institution." Well, you know, to be honest, they probably are, but to be fair to them, some graves are worth dancing on. If Jesus came back to life for a second time, he would be sprinting across the ocean to Lambada on Bin Laden's watery resting place.
Bit of satire.
I'm 34.
Bit of satire for you there, Buglers. Little bit of satire.
What a smart podcast.
Never afraid to tackle the big issues.
The benchmark in political satire.
That's right.
I'm not backing down, Murdoch. I'm not backing down.
There we go.
Kaboom.
Boom.
So is this still the podcast?
I don't know. No. Something's happened, no, isn't no. it? Something's definitely...
Yeah.
Happened.
Yeah. This is not it.
And now a Bugle section on what clothes not to wear in different kinds of weather. When it is intermittent showers, the main danger in changeable weather is rust. So if it looks like you're in for the odd spot of rain or occasional downpours, it's best to avoid wearing a full suit of armour. Unless you dry it thoroughly between each downpour, you cannot be sure that rust patches will not take hold. Hot sun. On baking days, it's best to make sure your clothing helps you stay as cool as possible. Therefore, you want clothes that are loose-fitting and made of light, breathable material. So once the temperature heads up into the high 70s or 80s, it's best not to wear a full suit of armour. Once you start sweating in one of these big metal bastards, you're pretty much steaming yourself like a stick of broccoli. Thunder and lightning. I think it's pretty clear where I'm going with this. The worst possible thing you can wear in a thunderstorm is anything that conducts electricity. So a full suit of armour should be avoided in these weathers. Some other quotes from recent British weather forecasts include, "It's a lovely summer's day today. Perfect for those of you who like to scare your next-door neighbours by sunbathing in nothing but a pair of Speedos with a set of antlers on your head." So there's a cold front funking it down from the North Atlantic. Real chirpy-looking one, this. The kind of weather that would ask you out for dinner, then scarper through the toilet window, leaving you to pick up the bill. So there's the possibility of heavy snow overnight. So those of you wanting to build a giant snow Stalin to intimidate your local neighbourhoods could be in for a wintry communist treat. And also, this one from just 3 days ago, it's going to be a little bit showery today, so those of you wanting to go out and burn a wicker man with an Edward Woodward impersonator inside, do make sure you take some extra kerosene.
We've always... This is nothing new, though, Andy. We've always looked to weather forecasters for our revolutionary leaders, who can forget when Michael Fish tried to get people to rise up and overthrow the John Major government in a bloody coup during a section on how there was a cold snap descending on East Anglia due to high winds coming off the North Sea. In fact... I believe that Lenin, if I'm not mistaken, was a weatherman before he overthrew the Tsar. He worked on the same news team as Stalin, who did the sport, and Trotsky, who was on entertainment news. But there's weirdly no record of Trotsky working there anymore. Quite a news team, though. What a news team.
Personally, I don't go for weather forecasts. I'd much rather just have a mysterious-looking priest in long purple robes staring into the entrails of a freshly slaughtered goat, banging a cudgel on a gong and saying, "Light drizzle by mid-afternoon."
Well, both... But even Marx and Engels, they serialised the Communist Manifesto through gradually and surreptitiously placing one word per day in the middle of the Daily Telegraph's weather forecast. It started in 1848, and I believe the Daily Telegraph only finished unwittingly serialising it quite recently when the word "unite" was mentioned regarding storm fronts colliding over the Lake District.
Of course, good weather is not always good news. Centrica, the UK's largest energy supplier, has announced that its pre-tax profits are down by 19%, and it has blamed the warmer weather last winter. So, come on, Buglers of Britain. Where is your sense of patriotism? We need to help Centrica. This is Britain's biggest energy supplier. Leave your radiators on full, cook unnecessarily stewed casseroles, install high-voltage theatrical lighting in your living room, also helpful for interrogating guests at troublesome dinner parties. Let's get Centrica's profits back up. These poor little bastards made just £1.26 billion before tax in the first 6 months of this year. That equates to a figure after tax of just £1.25 billion. So we need to step up to the plate. Your country needs you, British Buglers. Centrica are just trying to make an honest living by overcharging people through exploiting the fundamental human reluctance to freeze to death. And it's time for us to give them something back. I mean, I can barely bring myself to say this, John, but on the news of this diminished profit return, Centrica's shares fell 2.3 pence to 313 pence. I think if you are listening in Syria... I think that puts your little problems in perspective. And it's for the week beginning Monday, the 6th of June, 2011. 2011, John, as I'm sure you don't need me to tell you, is both the International Year of Chemistry and the International Year of Forests. And that, to me, sounds like a dangerously combustible combination. Do Beagles, do try to keep your chemistry and your forest separate, otherwise it's inevitably going to end up with someone trying to see how far they can fire a squirrel out of a test tube using a bit of sodium and some water from a puddle. England are taking another whacking in the cricket.
Aren't Sri Lanka quite a good one-day team?
They are good, but they're vulnerable. I mean, they don't bat very low, but we can't get through their top order, and we bat much too slowly.
No.
So Cook got 100 today, but not particularly devastating one.
Right.
And we only end up on 246 off 50 overs, and that's just not very much these days. Yeah. In fact, John, of the 108 one-day international hundreds hit since the start of 2010, it was the 97th quickest.
Well, that's a great stat. I mean, that's gold. That's absolute gold.
Lot 4, a single stamp, which has now sold for £1 million. John, is the Post Office Mauritius Tuppenny Blue stamp, which one of the most valuable stamps ever sold. And this is a stunning price for a stamp, which, as you know, is a small bit of paper. I mean, admittedly, Queen Victoria does look pretty f***ing hot in it. I mean, it's only kind of shoulders up, but still, you can only imagine what's happening below the stamp. But for that price, John, for £1 million, you should be able to get a stamp that sends a letter to Jupiter and gets you an alien in a box back by a return of post. It originally cost 2 pence, meaning that at this rate of inflation, within 150 years, that single stamp will be the richest thing in the world and will govern the planet with a reign of terror backed by unarguable military firepower. Also sold this week, a $15 million Stradivarius violin. Which is quite a lot for a violin, John. I mean, you used to play the viola.
Yeah.
Did you ever pay more than, I mean, just 2 or 3 million, I'd imagine, was the highest you ever went?
Yeah, I think it was certainly in and around it. But to put that in context, that's like 15 Michael Jackson jackets. Yeah. I mean, that's the only way I can think of thinking about.
Yeah.
That's huge.
But why are Stradivarius so valuable, you may well ask? Well, the reason is that Stradivari, who made them, used only the finest dinosaur bone from the hottest lady Tyrannosaurus rexes. And even in the 18th century, there weren't that many dinosaurs left alive. So Strad had to be a rare combination of persistent, seductive and blood-curdlingly violent to acquire the bones for his violin. Also, the strings on a Stradivarius are actually made from the web of the Sklampuchki spider, a rare Siberian spider which spins its web only for 15 minutes during the first picnic of the year. So you've got to be quick to get it and willing to sacrifice a ham sandwich to distract the spider. Stradivarius violins are also wireless, which bumps up their value by around about 5%. They're in fact so valuable that they've become celebrities in their own right. The Lady Blunt Stradivarius that was just sold for $15 million. For example, as famously dated, amongst others, the Duke of Wellington, W.G. Grace, the famous cricketer, Neville Chamberlain, Warren Beatty and Anne Hesh, and is also rumoured to be the mother of Jimi Hendrix's guitar. A guitar, of course, is a male violin.
Right, yeah.
And also sold a £3 million scarf. Now, that's a lot for a scarf,
what?
John. That's a £3 million scarf.
That better be warm.
Well, exactly. It was designed by painting and collage whiz Henri, the brush and or scissors of destiny Matisse. But that scarf would still have to be so warm that Captain Scott could have worn it and nothing else and run plums out to the South Pole and back without even thinking of dying.
In other items of celebrity shit, Marilyn Monroe's famous subway dress from The 7 Year Itch sold for just under $5 million from actress Debbie Reynolds' massive collection of Hollywood memorabilia. In the same auction, Judy Garland's blue and white dress from The Wizard of Oz raised over $1 million. And that's often the technique that movie studios use, Andy, to hang on to iconic costumes from films with a view to auctioning them off at a later date, which is why I was particularly surprised, Andy, to have my suit from The Love Guru mailed to me just a couple of weeks after the film was released. I thought that thing would go for at least $600 million. But the point is, I've got it now, so I think it's pretty clear I'm sitting on a total gold mine.
One other story that I read today, James Murdoch allegedly paid £100,000 to meet the Pope. Now,
wow.
Yeah, that's That's big money, John. I know the Pope is an A-list celeb and the earthly representative of Santa Claus, but for that money, I would want to meet Jesus for 100 grand, or for at least 2 disciples, at the very least. What I want to know is, John, £100,000 for a private audience with the Pope. What happened? What happened in that private audience? It looks... Yep. I know the Pope generally has a look but don't touch rule, but that is a lot of money. That is 100 grand.
Only very generally as well, Andy. Very, very generally.
He overpaid. We managed to get the Pope on the Bugle for just 50 quid and a bottle of Bulgarian Merlot. I think it was the Pope anyway. It was certainly a guy in a dress. I mean, how do you tell these days? I blame the 60s. But it's good to know the Pope's time is for sale, because... No, I don't know what it, you know. What would 10 grand get you with the Pope, do you think? 5 minutes?
5 minutes, everything above the shirt, I think.
I reckon, because I could stump up 10 grand, you know. I reckon we could raise 10 grand. And just to put up a shelf in my toilet. The Pope. I mean, the Pope might not be very good at DIY. I imagine.
A holy shelf.
Yeah. I imagine, given his job, he gets a bit funny about nails and bits of wood. So it might be a bit of a wonky shelf. But what a talking point. You know, to have a shelf that the Pope put up. It's there.
Well, especially if someone then comes in and criticises it. Who put that shelf up? The f***ing Pope did. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure that shelf is meant to be.
Well, the offer's on the table, Ratso. Yeah. Get back to me by return of post.
We might be able to get the Archbishop of Canterbury for a reduced fee.
Not interested. No. I've already got one of his bookcases.
Yeah.
No good at all.
I think, because the Archbishop of Canterbury can't help Andy as a Jew with the ongoing murder inquiry of Jesus.
He was guilty. Messianic in charge of a donkey. He can't get away with it. And this came in from Maria, who writes, thank you, Andy and John, you beautiful people. Well, just Andy. No offence, John. You, Chris. Oh, come on, leave it out. The poor guy. He has to bleep out his own insults. Do you know how hard that is for a man? I had an important history exam last week, which I successfully managed to revise the wrong material for. I had, however, been listening to a random bugle while cycling to school, in which Andy had a massive rant about important people in medicine. When I was blaming them for all the social problems in Britain. Anyway, I got into the exam to find that it was on this very subject. I was able to recall pretty much everything it said about who invented what, and as a result, I got 91%.
Oh, my God.
You literally saved my life. Well, not literally, figuratively. And if you could schedule an extensive comic rant about the troubles in Northern Ireland in a couple of weeks, I would be very grateful.
Just well, careful what you wish for.
Yep. And we are not endorsing the Bugle as a revision aid. Let us make that abundantly clear.
That is emphatically true.
We are not going to have your failed careers and disappointed parents on our conscience. Mm.
News International is already in enough trouble.
Some latest developments just coming in on the phone hacking scandal. Descendants of Alexander Graham Bell have apologised profusely for his invention of the telephone. They said that he had ballsed up big time. David Cameron has announced that all future meetings between politicians and the media will take place, quotes, in public parks, fully naked. And he's announced that to avoid excessive media power, newspapers will be restricted to a maximum print run of 15 and all televisions will be smashed. Rebecca Brooks has also offered a free compensatory chinwag to all phone hacking victims. She said they can call me up for a natter any time, I'll listen to their problems and I'll offer her a shoulder to cry on. And also, after the resignation of the Metropolitan Police's top two policemen, the British Association of Criminals and Vagabonds has announced a temporary suspension of all crime until the Met has got its shit sorted. It has also said that once the proposed slashing in the number of police officers as part of the government's cuts programme has been forced through, it will follow suit with a like-for-like slashing of the numbers of active criminals working the streets. The BACV's chief executive, Stralmore Fingers Boningsley, said, "We might be criminals, but we're British criminals, and therefore we have an innate sense of fair play. We will negotiate with the police to ensure that an appropriate and fair level of everyday criminality is maintained in the face of these savage and unjustifiable government cutbacks." The government has defended the police cut, saying that the big society will compensate through the establishment of locally run groups of vigilante thugs. David Cameron said, "It's time local communities started taking responsibility for their own blood feuds, not leaving it all for the coppers and the courts." Lucian Freud news now, and yesterday the news was announced that at the age of 88, one of Britain's greatest drawing and colouring in guys, well, what's the shorter word for that? Painters. Lucian Freud would be drawing and colouring in no more. Painting. He had stopped breathing, his heart had stopped giving it the whole pumpy in, pumpy out stick. His brain had for once stopped thinking about big wobbly women with no clothes on, and his arm had stopped trying to pick up sticks with bristles on the end and colouring stuff in. Well, the quick way of saying that, he died. That's it. But Freud was an absolute master of his arts, but, and in his case it was an enormous and evocatively expressed but. He might have heard of the paintbrush, but he clearly had not heard of the airbrush. Some of his honeys, John, had some serious cellulite showing. I mean, obviously showing. I mean, what was he thinking, John, in this day and age? So, to commemorate his passing and to help you avoid the pitfalls of so many of Freud's models, we present part one of the 75-part Bugle Personal Training Supplement. Now, part one, we hear a lot about people worried about their weight being too much, but what about people worried about their height being too much? You know, you don't have enough leg room, you're too easily picked out in a crowd by an assassin sent to bump you off by your gangland rivals, or you keep smashing your head on medieval beams, or you're fatally slow to react to people tying your shoelaces together. So no one wants to be too tall, so here is the Bugle's Manage Your Height Exercise Guide. 1. Find your local tree. Does it have a large, low-hanging branch 5 to 6 feet off the ground? Good. Stand underneath that branch. Now jump up as vigorously as possible, smashing the top of your head against the branch. Do this in repetitions of 10, with up to 5 repetitions in each of your 3 weekly sessions. Within just a few weeks, you will start to notice that your head has been driven downwards into your shoulders. Potential height saving, 2 inches. Part 2. Lie on your back with your legs vertically pointing upwards. Ensure your lower back is flush to the ground. Breathe rhythmically. Get your personal heightness trainer to lower a heavy anvil from a chain fixed to your ceiling onto the soles of your upturned feet. Allow the anvil to rest unsupported on your feet for up to 2 minutes at a time. Repeat in repetitions of 5. You should feel your legs start to be compressed within a couple of sessions. Potential height saving, 1.3 inches. Part 3. Any personal fitness regime can be assisted by small adjustments to your basic everyday activities, whether this involves improving your muscle tone by trampolining during funerals, or helping your cardiovascular fitness by screaming whilst you're eating breakfast. The same is true of height training. Do everything, from brushing teeth, to ironing, to cooking, to walking to the postbox to send off today's ransom demands, to plotting the downfall of your spouse or government, whilst carrying a large, heavy boulder on your shoulders. Boulders are easily and cheaply acquirable from most mountain ranges and some quarries. Simply hauling one around with you should ensure serious curvature of the spine within a week. Potential height saving, 3 inches. 4. Slouch as much as possible. In situations where you would normally stand upright, slouch. For example, other than a police identity parade, where slouching is a 98% reliable indicator of guilt. Other means of assistance in spine bending include wearing other people's glasses whilst reading or computing or driving, thus making yourself have to squint and hunch over your book, television or steering wheel. Potential long-term height saving, 1.2 inches. So that means that if you follow the Bugle height control plan, you could save yourself 7.5 inches in just a month, or your money back. Next week, part 2, facial expressions. The in-look for the 2011 facial fashion summer season is surprise. So we tell you all the exercises to hone your eyebrow-raising muscles and the best fish to impersonate for that perfect open-mouthed look of genuine gobsmackedness. Yeah, so, sure. That's it. That's all you're getting, Buglers. Stop crying. Pull yourselves together. Get on with your lives. That is it. That is it. If you can't deal with it, just lock yourself in your cellar for a week and come out when next week's Bugle 164 is published. That's the only advice I can give you.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Okay. Farewell.
Yep. And remember, Bugle safe.
Bugle safe.
Well, very much, people are getting injured, you know. Fo had an email from a guy last week who was listening to the Bugle whilst doing some weights in the gym and laughed at an inappropriate moment and ended up trapped underneath a heavy bar for help.
Good. That's good. So good slapstick.
Bugle safe, Bugle, that's what I'm saying. Look after
Bugle
yourself.
Bugle safe.
Yeah, look after
Bugle
yourself,
safe.
Look after others when you're
and
Bugle.
And if you can't Bugle safe, then push through it! Give me one more! Lift! Lift! Come on, you weasel! I hope that helped.
Bye-bye.
Farewell.
Hi, this is Gab Marcotti here. Now, I may not be funny like these freaking court gestures you have here, but this is football. It's a serious game, so it doesn't need jokes. If you want jokes, why don't you f*** off to Football Weekly and go enjoy lots of funny puns? Or hang around with these guys, Oliver and Zaltzman. Yes, they're very, very funny. Anyway, because football, like life, is serious and not something to be laughed at, please join me and some of the world's best pundits every Monday in the Game Podcast, which, of course, as you all know, is another podcast from The Times. No, we're not funny. We don't laugh at people's names. We don't make clever puns. We just tell you about football in a very, very serious way. And I, myself, am especially pedantic in doing so. Think you don't like it? Well, you probably think you don't like S&M or genital torture either. But that's until you've tried it. You can find us on iTunes or at thetimes.co.uk. Now-